It's 5:30. I'm Nora Flaherty, and you're listening to MPBN Radio. Ahead on Maine Things Considered this evening, we'll hear the details from today's State Drug Summit. Maine's Green Party changes its strategy, and a museum exhibit memorializes Samantha Smith 30 years after her death. We'll have those stories in a moment. First, this news. It's 5:32. I'm Nora Flaherty with this MPBN News. Maine Attorney General Janet Mills announced today that her office will not file criminal charges against a former Biddeford police officer or another man on the basis of sexual abuse allegations made by Matthew Lozen. Lozen alleged that he was the victim of sexual abuse by the two men when he was a teenager. Mills says there's insufficient evidence to prove the elements of a crime beyond a reasonable doubt, including the element of Lozen's age at the time of the alleged encounters. Maine Coast Memorial Hospital in Ellsworth is a step closer to becoming part of Eastern Maine Healthcare Systems, the parent company of Eastern Maine Medical Center. The Maine Department of Health and Human Services has granted EMHS a certificate of need pending the meeting of certain conditions, such as reporting on cost savings and about improvements in quality and outcome measures for 3 years. EMHS spokesperson Suzanne Spruce says EMHS has worked closely with Maine Coast Memorial Hospital for a long time and that the two organizations have developed a very successful collaborative spirit.
Maine Coast is a partner in our Beacon Health statewide network, which provides accountable care across the state. They participate in our Medicare Pioneer ACO, and it was a natural step to explore a greater partnership for both organizations.
Spruce says this step, although not the last in the process, keeps the two entities on target to complete an affiliation by October 1st of this year. And federal fisheries managers are looking for comments about the issue of localized depletion in the Atlantic herring fishery. That happens when more fish are taken than can be replaced locally or through migration. Pat Fiorelli, spokesperson for the New England Fisheries Management Council.
It does happen in fisheries around the world, and there is some suspicion that it might be happening in our herring fishery, so we intend to take a good look at that and hope that people will offer comments sometime between now and September 30.
The request for feedback comes as the New England Fishery Management Council is working on an amendment to make sure future Atlantic herring catch limits take into account scientific uncertainty, the status of the herring stock, and other factors. In weather tonight, showers and thunder ending with skies clearing overnight. A little bit drier overnight with highs with areas of fog statewide and lows in the high 50s to low 60s. And tomorrow, sunny in the south except for a few afternoon clouds, otherwise partly to mostly cloudy. Drier with highs in the high 60s to low 80s north to south. This is MPBN. This is Maine Things Considered on MPBN Radio. I'm Nora Flaherty. Governor Paul LePage convened his summit on Maine's drug crisis behind closed doors and left the event without talking to reporters today. But other people who had taken part in the meeting did outline the basics of a new plan in response to a rising tide of overdose deaths this year. Mal Leary has our story.
Maine has witnessed 105 overdose deaths so far in 2015, and participants at the summit have decided to set up 3 working groups to improve law enforcement, treatment, and prevention. The U.S. Attorney for Maine, Tom Delahanty, is heading up the effort to set up those work groups.
Kind of volunteered because the one thing that I did not want to happen is to leave here today with no particular plan. And I think we have the beginning of one.
Maine Attorney General Janet Mills says it's clear that stricter enforcement will not be enough to reduce the flow of drugs into the state. She says the police on the streets are also dealing with Mainers who are addicted and often commit crimes to pay for drugs.
You got to have a place to send those people from the emergency room so they're not just walking out, going back to the streets and back to their apartments and shooting up heroin again.
But Public Safety Commissioner John Morris says the most immediate result of the summit is his decision to commit existing state resources to create a special intelligence unit led by the state police, to help stop the flow of drugs from Mexico through larger cities and states and into rural areas like Maine.
The drug issue is huge, and anybody that doesn't recognize is having their head in the sand. Increased communication between all members of the community, private, federal, National Guard, Maine law enforcement, is all going to help resolve this problem.
Morris says the intelligence effort will build on an existing program that uses four National Guard soldiers acting as intelligence analysts. Maine Drug Enforcement Agency Director Roy McKinney says his 40 agents are facing a constantly changing environment, which is focusing more and more on heroin.
This year, first 6 months, 206 heroin trafficking investigations, while the synthetic narcotic investigations numbered 95.
No lawmakers were invited to the governor's summit, but Senator Ann Haskell, a Portland Democrat, spoke with reporters outside.
You can't categorize people anymore. You can't say that our law enforcement, that Chief Soschuk or Sheriff Mary are only interested in the law enforcement side. That's just not true anymore.
On July 31st, emergency crews in Portland responded to 14 suspected overdoses in a 24-hour period. Representative Mark Dion, a Democrat who has served as the Cumberland County Sheriff, says the work groups will have to come up with strategies to reach people long before they're addicts.
I'm not sure how much deterrent we can provide if one is willing to stick a needle into their vein. I mean, every time they do that, they're making a life and death decision, and they're not deterred by that choice.
Department of Health and Human Services Commissioner Mary Mayhew says her department will work with the groups that are being set up to address treatment and prevention.
We have got to increase our efforts to improve the approach taken in these treatment services, to create standardized approaches, to create accountability.
Tom Delahanty, the U.S. attorney, says he hopes to have the work groups organized early in September. For MPBN News, I'm Mal Leary.
You're listening to Maine Things Considered on MPBN Radio. Still to come, it's been 30 years since Samantha Smith, the 10-year-old girl who was called America's youngest ambassador, died. Now she's being remembered in a new museum exhibit. But first, until now, the Maine Green Independent Party has followed the practice of the state's two major parties by allowing only enrolled Greens to vote in their primaries. But at its state convention last weekend, the Greens decided to welcome all unenrolled Maine voters to help decide nominees in gubernatorial and legislative contests. A.J. Higgins has details.
Maine's Greens are sending a simple message to all of the state's unenrolled or independent voters. It's our party, and you can take part without having to join. That's something that Green Party co-chair Gil Harris says should be attractive to voters who do not identify with a political party. And they are the largest voter segment in the state.
There's a growing number of people that have alienated themselves from both of the, you know, the main corporate parties.
With 44,000 registered members, Harris says the Maine Greens have come a long way from their fringe party beginnings, closely aligned with environmental activism and social justice issues. Harris says the party's 10 key values focus on community, diversity, and economic sustainability.
Our 10 key values are really a very mainstream approach to what Americans are thinking, and we just need to get that word out there as to what we do represent. Many people have the idea that the Greens are a fringe party, but if you look at what our real values are and what our platforms represent, they're pretty mainstream.
During the party's annual convention last weekend, the Greens elected a new state committee and approved bylaw changes that included the primary provision. The change will not extend to the Greens' presidential selection process, which is conducted through a caucus. Still, the open primary system adopted by the Greens should provide a higher profile for the party, and that's something some election watchers say is long overdue.
Well, I don't think there's any doubt that the Greens have been on the decline in Maine in the post-Pat LaMarsh era. I don't think there's any doubt about that.
Mark Brewer, a political science professor at the University of Maine, says the Greens relied on Bangor radio host Pat LaMarsh to become the Green Party's standard bearer for governor in 1998 and 2006. Picking up 7 and 9% of the vote respectively, LaMarsh provided a strong personality for the Maine Greens and gave the party a recognizable image. Since then, Brewer says the Greens have not been able to field strong candidates, and opening the party primary to independents could provide a much-needed shot in the arm.
The Green profile would seem to have a relatively natural constituency here in Maine. They've been on a lower profile recently. In my opinion, that doesn't mean they have to stay that way.
Harris says unenrolled voters should be able to participate in the party's primaries beginning next year. For MPBN News, I'm A.J. Higgins.
And finally today, 30 years ago this week, 13-year-old Samantha Smith of Manchester, Maine, died in a plane crash. Smith had gained international fame several years earlier for writing a letter to Soviet leader Yuri Andropov expressing her worries about a nuclear war. Andropov responded to the letter, and Smith would later make a two-week visit to the Soviet Union, where she became known as America's youngest ambassador. To honor Samantha Smith on the 30th anniversary of her death, the Maine State Museum in Augusta has opened a new exhibit. Patty White visited and has more.
Samantha Smith was just 10 years old when she wrote to Yuri Andropov. When the Soviet leader wrote back, his young pen pal was cast into the international spotlight, interviewed here by Ted Koppel on ABC's Nightline in 1983.
What did you write to him, and then what did he write back?
Well, I asked him, why do you want to conquer the world? And he wrote back to me and said that he wanted nothing of the kind.
Andropov invited Smith to visit the Soviet Union, and she accepted. Maine TV station WCSH produced a report about her trip that aired on the Phil Donahue daytime talk show.
Samantha's arrival in Moscow was the start of her VIP treatment by the Soviet government. She was met by three high-ranking members of the Soviet Foreign Ministry who were to stay with her and her parents throughout their tour.
She was so open and had no guile and just won everybody over.
Lori Labar is a curator at the Maine State Museum in Augusta. She's created a new exhibit, which includes never-before-published photos, on just 3 days of Smith's two-week trip when she visited Artek Children's Camp in the Crimea.
Because it's not the anniversary of her trip, it's the anniversary of her death, I wanted to focus on the kid as much as I could, but within the context of the trip.
It was at Camp Artek, Labar says, that Smith could unwind and be a kid. One photo shows Smith beaming as she descends the passenger stairs from her plane upon arrival. In another image, she joins campers doing calisthenics. But it's three photos of Smith playing on a beach along the Black Sea that are most striking to Labar.
These activities, the sort of secrets being told and trying to scare a kid with a crab and that type of activity is just replayed on every beach all summer long everywhere in the world. And it's just kids being kids and they're the same. It's hard to imagine that in this idyllic scene that there were two sets of people who were contemplating whether or not they were going to blow each other up. And that's the context for this.
The exhibit is small. It includes a dozen photos, all donated by a Russian photographer who followed Smith during her trip, as well as a display case with a traditional Russian dress and headpiece she wore. But it's prominently placed in the museum's entrance lobby, and Labar hopes that visitors will take away a realization that individuals can affect change, even at a very young age.
I think that people started to realize on both sides that our nations weren't just our politicians, and that it wasn't just the generals, and it wasn't just the head of the government, that there was actually millions of people who were a lot like us. And I think that is one of the things that was most important about her trip.
After Smith returned home to Maine, Phil Donahue invited her on his show and asked whether she's still worried about nuclear war.
Are you less scared?
Yeah.
Really?
I don't think I'm scared anymore at all.
Why?
Well, I went to Russia, and the Soviets and me and I got to know each other. And they're just really nice people to me.
Over the next 2 years, Smith continued her role as an unofficial peace ambassador. She spoke at a symposium in Japan. She interviewed U.S. presidential candidates for the 1984 election. She also became an actress. On August 25th, 1985, she and her father were returning to Maine from a TV shoot in London on a small commercial plane. It crashed just short of the Auburn airport, killing all six passengers and its two crew members. Lori Labar says Smith's legacy continues not only in the U.S., but in Russia, where an exhibit in Moscow is also honoring her on the 30th anniversary of her death. For MPBN News, I'm Patty White.
And at 13 minutes before 6, it's time to check the weather forecast with our meteorologist, Paul Cousins.
A lethargic cool front is slowly edging out of eastern Maine early this evening, allowing for showers and thunderstorms to wind down throughout the central half of Maine, clearing late. However, showers and thunderstorms will not exit northern and downeast Maine till dawn with areas of dense fog. Upper 50s to low 60s statewide. Significant cleansing of the humidity will commence tomorrow. Northern and western Maine, mostly cloudy with a few showers. Central and down east counties, morning fog lifts with a few slivers of sun. A stray afternoon shower possible. For the southwestern third of Maine, bright morning sun followed by a few afternoon clouds. Upper 60s to 80 north to south. Other than a few clouds north Friday, sparkling sunshine and delightfully dry. Saturday, becoming partly cloudy over northern and western Maine, mostly sunny for the rest of the state. This is meteorologist Paul Cousins for the Maine Public Broadcasting Network.
And that's Maine Things Considered. Thanks today to Ed Morin, Keith Shortall, and Barbara Caritti. I'm Nora Flaherty.